I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For this Tuesday, the 2nd of June, our guest this hour is the author of Two Tyrants, The Myth of a Two-Party Government and the Liberation of the American Voter. He says in his book, 47% of Americans consider themselves independents. Half of millennials do not trust either party. Voter satisfaction for the first time in history. Over 25 years, the poll found that a majority of Americans disapproved of their own member of the U.S. House of Representatives. So why do we have a system that's so entrenched in two parties, the Democrats and the Republicans? And would a change be better for all of us? That's the question of this hour, and our guest is Adam Roderick. He's the author of the aforementioned book. He is a former newspaper writer, has worked as a legislative analyst and policy advisor in many state legislatures, and he calls for some very interesting changes, including all state and federal elections, including the presidential election, to be strictly nonpartisan. Think about that for a minute, how that would change everything. We will welcome phone calls for Adam. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. And I would think as we move along here this hour, we'll have lots of response, so call in as early as you would like. Hello, Adam. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi there, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Isn't that number amazing? 47% of Americans consider themselves independents?
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually one of the things that got me to write the book, because I saw these Gallup polls, and these are actually monthly Gallup polls of voter identification. And especially over the last 3 to 4 years, they're really becoming more and more polarized, where more people are calling themselves independents and fewer are calling themselves either Republicans or Democrats. Right now, it's almost 2-1, the independents versus the party affiliation. And it just seemed to me that the numbers don't add up. How is it possible that these two parties are winning every single election if only half of the people that are voting really want either one?
Mm-hmm. George Washington was not a member of a party, right?
That's correct. He was never a member of a party. And in fact, he spoke out against, you know, political parties having much power, specifically for the reason that they would become entrenched in their own need to win the competition as opposed to actually solving problems.
When you say that our current election process suffocates those of independent thought, how does it suffocate independent thought?
Well, mainly a big reason is because the parties hold the purse strings for candidates, because obviously money runs things in American elections. And so once somebody decides they want to run, often the first thing they have to do is figure out, okay, what's the best strategy for me to win this seat? Even if it's a good person who wants to make a difference, they've got to align themselves with one party or the other, because that's the only way they can start getting that stream of money into their campaign in order to compete. And that's unfortunate, because that's the way the system has been set up for so long, that anyone who generally, in most districts, you know, Bernie Sanders is kind of an exception because, again, he's from a smaller state. So you can have a larger footprint, you can be a little bit more independent in a smaller state. But in most states, they have huge party machines that really just run everything. So if you want to run, even if you want to be an independent, to get on the ballot and to get the money you need, you really have to align with one party or the other.
It's interesting you bring up Bernie Sanders. We spent quite a bit of time talking about him yesterday because he's drawing these overflow crowds in Iowa, and yet it seems to be a foregone conclusion because Hillary Clinton has a lock on the money. He may be drawing the crowds and may force her to address certain issues, but the thought that he could become the presidential candidate for the Democratic Party as an independent seems pretty far out there, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And he's the perfect example, because really on paper, he's not a Democrat. He's left of the Democrats. And a lot of people are saying that he's really in the race to sort of try to pull her to the left a little bit, for the good of the left in his mind. But he's really not. If he had his choice, I'm sure he would run as an independent or possibly, you know, a further left party, but he's unable to do so. So his only recourse is to hope to have a voice by joining the Democratic race, because otherwise, if he runs now as an independent, he will not have anywhere near the media coverage that he will if he's competing against Hillary Clinton.
Incumbents, you write, continue to sail to electoral victory within the framework designed exclusively by and for the Democrats and the Republicans. It's because they have a lock on the money again that would allow them to sail to victory again and again?
Well, it's somewhat the money, but I think the larger picture, if we look at it, has to do with the way that our elections are designed. Because, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans are actually not part, officially, of the U.S. government. Most people don't really think about that, but these are just independent organizations who are choosing their own leader. But because of the way that our election systems are set up, it actually appears that the Democratic and Republican primaries, when it comes to the presidential election, are really part of our government, the first step in the U.S. government elections, because the government funds, partly funds at least, and operates these elections. So we sort of get brainwashed to think, okay, well, the Republicans and Democrats are part of our government. We always choose one or the other, and we really just go with that. And it's been since 1853 that those two parties have won every single presidential election. So they're so ingrained in our psychology now that we really don't even know how to get off that hamster wheel.
The book covers a lot of territory. You talk about 2012 being the year that Congress, for the first time in history, had a majority of members who are millionaires, which is quite a thought, actually. Does the Democratic and Republican stronghold on the whole system have anything to do with that, or is that just a different issue?
No, that's really sort of a more of a result of the way that the system has been set up, because now with big money in politics and corporations having so much power, I mean, so many corporations donate millions of dollars to both sides in every election. So no matter who wins, they're still sort of calling the shots. So all of those things come together really to make politics more of a money-making venture now for the independent politician than really, you know, a way to make change. And even what I say in the book, too, is a lot of the people who are very competent and well-meaning politicians come into the system and just sort of get ground up and spit out the other side looking to make a quick buck because they become so disillusioned with the way the system works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You also talk about people may say the right thing on the campaign trail, but Democratic and Republican politics having such a stronghold on the system that once you get in office, you may give up on what you campaigned on. How do the two parties, what do they have to do with that?
Well, really, again, it goes back, so much of this goes back to money, because the parties control so much of the campaign donations through various streams that if you want to continue holding your seat, or if you want to win a new seat, which is an even bigger hill to climb, you really have to have full support of the party. I mean, we've seen over and over again when someone goes off the reservation, either a Republican or a Democrat, it's pretty quick that the party sort of steps away from them. They may lose a little bit of support, and then other people step right in and take that place. So you have to have the full support of your party if you want to be able to win that seat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You call for some very interesting ideas. Ballot access for all state and federal elections to be reduced to first four candidates to produce valid petition signatures from 5% of the electorate. They may appear on the ballot. What are the chances of that happening, and why did you come up with that? How would that open up the system?
Well, because right now, the U.S., you know, when I talk about ballot access just means the ease or difficulty with which somebody can get on an electoral ballot. And the U.S. actually has some of the most stringent ballot access rules and laws in the entire world. It's much more difficult to get on a ballot in the U.S. than in a lot of other countries that we might consider less democratic than our own. So this is actually a reform, and most of the reforms that I'm proposing are actually, if you look at it on a grassroots level, very possible, because all of these rules and laws for federal elections are actually made at the state level. So if you have a good grassroots organization within your state and you want to push for this type of legislation to change the way that our elections are actually handled, it really is a a difficult task, but one that's actually doable. And so, you know, something like changing the ballot access laws is very, very doable if you have the right grassroots organization on the ground.
What about these labels that we've had for years and years and extends beyond Democrats and Republicans? You could argue that whatever the philosophy was behind the Democratic label or Republican label, it is no longer the case. But if you're saying I'm running as a Republican, doesn't it indicate a certain number of ideas in the voter's mind that you're for small government, you're for a strong defense? If you're a Democrat, you're for perhaps a larger government working for the good of the people. If you're a socialist, you want maybe utilities to be held by the people and nonprofit organizations, that you have a certain set of principles that go with a label, which gives you a head start when you're deciding whether or not you're going to vote for somebody or if you're going to align yourself with similarly minded people.
Yeah, definitely. And there's, I don't necessarily have an issue with political parties per se. I think anyone should have the right to join or not join any political party. But the issue is that these two parties, since they developed so early and became so powerful such a long time ago, that now they're so entrenched that those are the only two options. So, like you said, you know, you mentioned socialists. I'm sure there are plenty of socialists out there who would be happy to vote for a socialist candidate if that candidate, first of all, was actually on the ballot, and secondly, actually was not blacked out of the media because they're not a Republican or a Democrat, because that's another huge part of this, is the media, in general, has chosen one side or the other. Most media personalities, even if they try to keep it quiet, it's not too hard to figure out. So if someone wants to run as a socialist, it's really not a realistic possibility that they're going to get elected in America today, because the system is set up for these two, and if you don't belong to one of those, you don't belong.
Mm-hmm. I'll ask this of our audience in a moment, or I'll ask it now. If you consider yourself an independent, what does that mean? We're interested in, well, we'll ask you to participate fully in just a moment. But when you look at that 47% saying they are independents, how does that break down, Adam?
Well, you know, at least half of those are what they call leaners, you know, people who either lean Democrat or lean Republican but are not comfortable with the entire platform of one or the other. So when they do public polling of the general population, most people are relatively moderate. Most people are slightly left of center or slightly right of center, or, you know, they sort of straddle the line. On some things they're left, on some things they're right. So if you had independent candidates actually on the ballot, if you had nonpartisan elections where you knew you were going to walk into that voting booth and you were not going to see an R, a D, or anything else, everyone in your mind is going to be independent, you're going to have to do a little bit more work as a voter to be informed on what people are actually thinking. Because like you said, you know, party identification can be helpful to say, okay, generally this person thinks this. But if you're walking into a blank ballot with just names, you're going to have to do a little bit more homework before you go in there, because you want to make sure you don't really throw your vote away on somebody who doesn't reflect your values at all.
And what makes you think we'll do our homework?
Well, I mean, it's very possible for Americans to do their homework. I know a lot of times people, I've been told in having discussions about the book that, well, people just don't know any better. That's expecting a lot of them. But I think that's a little bit condescending to the average American voter, because most people will want to make sure, if they're going to make the effort to go and cast their vote, they're going to want to do at least minimal background checking to make sure, like I said, that they're not voting for somebody who is the complete opposite of everything that they believe in. So it just causes a little bit more extra effort and a little more extra thought in researching who you want to vote for.
Wouldn't you indeed have to get rid of the current campaign finance system in order for this to work? Doesn't the current campaign finance system have itself wedded to two parties?
Yeah, it does, but the grassroots effort, like I mentioned before, on the ground, if you can get the right people in office at the state level, the average voter and the average activist has much more of a footprint at the state level than they do at the federal level. That's why I say in the book that that's why marijuana legalization and gay marriage have been able to have a domino effect state by state by state, because these are issues where there are large, large, powerful lobbying groups at the federal level who have been able to keep their congresspeople and their senators in check to keep these things from passing. But at the state level, there's a movement, a wave of people who want these things to change, and these are, in many people's minds, pragmatic issues that are just day-to-day things, and they've been able to pass them at the state level. So I look at this as the same type of an issue. If you've got the right people on the ground at the state level, they can make it happen.
Do you think more people would run for office with your suggestions?
Absolutely. I mean, I think I know people, multiple people personally, who would be willing
really?
To run for office. Yeah, if they thought that they didn't have to choose one or the other because they have such a distaste for both. And I think most people right now in the country have a distaste for both, but they still are forced to walk into that voting booth every time and vote for one or the other.
We're going to welcome phone calls. We have many messages coming in on Facebook and on our email system here, and we welcome your phone calls as well. Our guest this hour is the author of a very provocative essay, really. It's in a book form. It's a long essay, Two Tyrants, The Myth of a Two-Party Government and the Liberation of the American Voter. What do you think? Should we get rid of, not necessarily completely get rid of the parties, but the importance of the Democratic and Republican parties should be lessened in this country and the system changed so that our elections are nonpartisan? Would more people vote? Would more money get out of politics? Would it more accurately reflect where the electorate is, 47% saying that they are indeed independent? Why is it that we have mostly two parties, and that's the way it's been for a long, long time? Should it continue? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, where there are many messages already, is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. I am particularly interested in hearing from those of you who are independents, too. What does that mean to you? Do you lean one way or the other? Do you vote on the person and you vote Democratic sometimes or Republican? Would this open up the system? Would you feel more likely that you might consider running for office, which is a problem? People aren't running for office now if we had nonpartisan elections. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. The author of Two Tyrants, The Myth of a Two-Party Government and the Liberation of the American Voter is our guest this hour. Peter in Waukesha is our first caller for you, Adam. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, my comment was that I often feel distraught when I have to vote, and I've never found one candidate that holds both of the things that I'd like to have in a candidate. And for one issue is pro-life. I can't stand the death penalty. I hate it that people are put to death, that they might have been innocent, that they might be able to be rehabilitated, and yet we put them to death as if none of that could happen. And then on the other side is unborn children. There the Republicans are fine, but you know, I can't find one place that has both. That's just one issue. There are so many issues like that that I have to pick and choose. And, you know, depending what decade of my life I'm in, I'm either conservative or liberal, and it's hard to find a home.
So what do you think of Adam's suggestion here, that we turn this into a nonpartisan voting system? Would that help?
It could. I mean, I could find a candidate like with my kind of beliefs that gets out there and starts, you know, gathering votes and could do something that way. But yeah, I think it could.
Adam, what do you think?
I think that's a big part of the issue, is that there are a lot of people who are way on the left on some issues and way on the right on others, and there is no one to represent those people because there's no freedom for people to get out there as candidates and say, you know, I'm for this issue and I'm for that issue. If the two parties sort of have a stranglehold on which one holds that issue, you've got to pick one or the other. But if you had independent elections and there was a lot more freedom for candidates with divergent views on separate issues to come out, then, I mean, there would be a lot more people, especially regionally, because, you know, we're such a large country that I think there are people maybe in the Northwest who would have a number of socialist candidates or independent candidates that have far left views, they might get elected. And then some place like Texas might have more Tea Party type candidates and more independent candidates. It would be a more representative system regionally and statewide for people, I think, as well.
Thank you, Peter, so much for your call. Caleb in Manitowoc, hi.
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 So my comment mostly was that I don't think parties are inherently bad, but I think to make more parties and make them more effective, we would need to get past the first past the post type system where the one party with the most votes would win, and that kind of forces everyone else to the other side. If we would have a more representative system, that would allow different parties to go instead of going on a candidate-by-candidate basis.
Adam.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, the first-past-the-post system is really why we have these two powerful parties that got set up in the beginning. So what I'm also proposing is a ranked-choice voting system. So what you would have is 4 to 6 candidates in a primary, an open primary, operated by the government, and then you would rank your choices. You know, this is my first, second, third, and fourth, and then the top two point-getters from that ranking system, whoever gets the top 2 points, would go into the general election, you know, the runoff general election, and that would give a much more representative view of what people wanted. Because if you just have a completely open primary without ranking those choices, a lot of times those votes get split, and then people get in office who actually nobody really wanted. So I absolutely agree that the first-past-the-post system is a problem, and we need to go to ranked choice voting.
Michael on Facebook says, what have other countries done, or is this an unprecedented and unbreakable stranglehold on political power in this country?
I really looked into it, and there's such a wide variety of the way that things are done. But we're such a unique situation for so many reasons. First of all, these two parties became so powerful so fast. Secondly, we're such a large, decentralized country when it comes to our state elected officials that we can't really look too much at other countries, but those that do have ranked choice voting, like I mentioned before with the last callers, they tend to have much more satisfied citizens with their elected officials. So, there are some countries that have two parties and most of the people are satisfied with it, but they also don't have the money flowing in that we do. So we can look to other countries for examples of what may work and what may not, but really it's an experiment because there's no other country with our setup and our history.
The money flowing in is just phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually what I tell people is it's pretty frightening because what has been happening over the last 2 to 3 decades in a lot of ways is our politics are starting to reflect the historical politics of a lot of third world and underdeveloped countries as far as, like I said, millionaires are the majority in Congress. We have more and more large elite corporations and groups funneling money into the elections and essentially buying the elections, and we're slowly falling down that slippery slope towards being, almost a third world country when it comes to the way our elections operate.
David in Chicago says this, I would simply eliminate petitioning and go to the British system, let anyone who can pay a filing fee, refundable if you poll at least 10% of the vote on election day, get on the ballot.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting idea. And like I mentioned before, I think a lot of great ideas could flow in if we could get the right people into these state legislatures who have the power to change our election laws. We could end up with, regionally and statewide, various different election systems because the issue is that the states have the power to determine how their citizens are going to vote for Congress and going to vote for president. And that's set forth in the Constitution. That's not going to change. So if Wisconsin decides we want to do a straw poll to determine who is going to be our winner for the presidential election, it can be done. And that's something that people need to realize, that within their own state, if they can organize, and, a state like Wisconsin, which has a highly organized voter base, has a lot of power to change the things that they want to change when it comes to the way we vote.
Rich in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi. I'm wondering if your guest could comment on, or if there's anything in his book about, in 2006 in Connecticut in the primary, Joseph Lieberman ran against a Democrat by the name of Ned Lamont. And Lamont won that primary. I mean, talk about voter fatigue. Voters backed Lamont, and then I think Lieberman labeled himself as either an independent or a petitioning Democrat. Voters had rejected him because he was so closely allied with many of the policies of George W. Bush. This happened at the state level with a lot of really dedicated voters. I wonder if your guest has anything to say about why voters get so disillusioned, even when they do bring forth candidates that they think are better candidates. And then covertly, the Democratic Party funds, you know, an ultra-conservative Democrat. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I am aware of that. I actually remember when it happened. And I think a big reason that was able to happen, again, was because of the way that the federal elections are set up at the state level. So even though, you know, he may have lost, he still had the option. If it were a weighted primary like I'm suggesting, he would have had to run in that first open primary, and maybe he would have gotten, you know, enough votes to get into the runoff. But then if he would have lost in that runoff, that would have been it. He wouldn't have had an option to run again and to try to get back in. It's just that there are so many loopholes right now, and anyone who gets into office, especially a senator, gains so much power so quickly and has so much money running to them that, you know, if they can just get a foot in the door in a situation like that, it's really hard to beat them. If they're rabid enough to just keep going after it, you're really facing an uphill battle to get them out of office once they're there.
Thanks, Rich, for the call. How many, when you look at, I don't know, mayoral elections or other elections throughout the country, are there a lot of nonpartisan races, Adam?
There are a surprising number, actually. A lot of the largest cities in the country have nonpartisan mayoral elections. I mean, Los Angeles, Detroit, Jacksonville, Dallas, Fort Worth. I mean, some of the largest metropolises in the country hold nonpartisan mayoral elections, and it seems to work really well. And a lot of them are open primaries with 4 to 6 candidates, and then, you know, if nobody gets at least half of those votes in the primary, then they go to a runoff with the top two. And that seems to offer, I mean, myself, I've worked at a state legislature, multiple state legislatures, and then I've also worked at a city council that was nonpartisan. And I did see a much more wider range of ideas from those council people because their responsibility was less to their party and making their party happy as it was to the citizens to, at the end of their term, be able to say, look, this was a problem and this is how I solved it. So it's absolutely reasonable to think that in America we can have nonpartisan elections because it happens every single day. I mean, the state legislature of Nebraska is actually completely nonpartisan. It's
really
the only unicameral, nonpartisan state legislature in the entire country, and it's been that way for quite a while.
I didn't know that. Steve in Racine, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Hey, thanks for the show. Really quickly, first I want to say I'm glad Bernie's running, but it's so disheartening to think that he's the only one that really can make a change here, and he seems like he speaks from the heart, and he's got a snowball's chance in you-know-what to be president. It's really sad. But I wanted to say that I got involved with a campaign program, seminars-type thing, two-day thing, and the first day I went to it, see what this was all about, and a couple of friends went with me, and I had long hair, but I tucked it up under my hat, and during that whole process that day, we had to talk about, kind of promote ourselves and stuff, and then see if the people in the room would vote for us. And just about everybody voted that I would be one of the ones they would pick. The next day, I came in without the hat, my hair down in a ponytail, and he asked one more time for me, and only two people thought I was a viable candidate, even though my ideas didn't change. And I got the feeling, you know, sometimes I think people don't even care whether it's Republican or Democrat. They just look at somebody and, yeah, you know, he looks like a bum. I'm not voting for him. And, oh, he's wearing a nice bow tie and a nice $1,000 suit. I want to vote for him. I have family members that are dairy farmers in Wisconsin, and they vote for Republicans, even though the Republicans mess with their farming, their dairy farm practices all the time. But because they think that at someday, look at how they dress, someday we will be like that. And it's, you know, to me, that's not any way to to elect somebody for the, to run this country. You know, and I my belief is still, if you take care of the kids and the elders, everything else will kind of work itself out. But you got to take care of the kids and you got to take care of the elders. And Bernie Sanders is the only one, it seems like, he can do that.
Steve, will you consider running for office?
I was actually considering. There were a couple of people that had talked to me about it. And but you know what? What am I? You know, after that whole thing, I shaved my head. And
oh my goodness!
Somebody tell me. I had somebody tell me I was too extreme then, and they wouldn't vote for me.
You can just so say, like, I don't have any hair anymore. It's all right.
But then, you know, we have guys in Wisconsin in the legislature that don't have hair, and these guys are awesome, you know.
Right. But, absolutely.
Right?
Who needs hair? Yeah.
Right. Thank you so much, Kim.
Thanks, Steve. I think Steve ought to run for office. I mean, that's another problem we're having in the country as well, is people aren't running for office. There are some races, many of them go completely uncontested.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's funny he used the word disheartening, because I've heard that over and over and over again from voters and talking to people, just picking people's brains, asking opinions of friends. And, you know, it's funny he mentioned the physical aspect of running for office. I have a friend who ran for state office in another state, and he told me the story that at the time he had a beard. It was well-groomed and trimmed and everything, but he had a beard. He was very well-experienced, and he went to the first Republican Party meeting for all of the new candidates. And so they were giving them orientation materials, and one woman said, the woman who was actually running the class said, okay, and, you know, this is for one of our people sitting here, you know, anybody with facial hair, you really need to shave it off, because people will not trust you. I defy you to name me a current politician with some power who has facial hair. And what she didn't realize is, at that state, at that time, the governor had a full beard.
Oh.
But I think we get so conditioned, especially
right.
when we're within our parties, that our party people have to look this way. And it really is sad, because then the rest of us get conditioned that way, and it's just sort of a psychological waterfall that flows over, and we just start judging people by the way they look.
Well, this is the TV age, right? You have to have a certain kind of look, and you're not looking at substantive issues. You're looking at all these collages of the candidate, you know, at this place and at that place, looking terrific, looking sparkling, and always well-groomed. That's our age.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think with so much television coverage of candidacies and candidates, it's very easy if, you know, some media outlet is really pro one party or the other, it's very easy for them to take any clip of someone fudging their words or looking like an idiot or having their hair
yes.
unkempt
right.
and showing that over and over and over to say, look,
right.
this person's not worthy. And the media has so much power when it comes to the images that we see for candidates.
We're welcoming phone calls. We're speaking this hour with the author of Two Tyrants, The Myth of a Two-Party Government and the Liberation of the American Voter. A.G. Broderick is our guest, and he's a writer and former staff writer for an American newspaper. He has worked as a legislative analyst and policy advisor in many state legislatures and also at the municipal level. And we're talking about a shakeup in the system that we have, dominated by two parties, the Democrats and the Republicans. What if instead we got rid of those, not got rid of the parties, but opened this system up and had nonpartisan elections, all state and federal elections, strictly nonpartisan, general elections consisting of a runoff between the two top candidates from an open primary, publicly funded party primaries to be replaced by publicly funded four-candidate weighted primaries. Our guest says the current federal campaign finance laws not only favor the two large parties, but also make them virtually unbeatable in the money race. Eventually, that system will be challenged and perhaps changed. But at the moment, he believes in working on the nonpartisan issue. What would you get? You get more candidates in the race. You would have ideas dominate discussion instead of short television ads. Do you think this would be a better thing than what we have now? And he makes a good point. When you look at the number of Americans who don't identify with either party, they say they're independents. Here's our phone number. Steve, thanks for your call. 800-486-8655. And lines are open for you. They've been pretty crowded, but now they're open. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, leave your thoughts there. We love to read them, and like the page, and then you'll know what's happening in future shows, is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Okay, let's go back to phone calls. Author of Two Tyrants, The Myth of a Two-Party Government, and The Liberation of the American Voter. Actually, let's go to a couple more Facebook comments first. Brian writes, Adam, I sort of like the idea of citizen government. When selected, we go to Washington and vote. There would be a staff there to fill us in on the facts and the costs, and everybody gets the same info, and we vote. You could be there 6 months or a year or less.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. There are a number of people floating those types of ideas around, and unfortunately, I think that would be such a drastic change for our entire system, such an overhaul, that it'd be pretty hard to get people on board because they would fear such a grand change when they feel, you know, the trajectory of the country might not be going where they want, but they don't necessarily want to scrap the whole system and start fresh. But it is an interesting idea, and it could be maybe tested at the state level to see how it works.
Laura is next in Spring Green. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I'm sort of a Mr. Smith goes to Washington, but why wouldn't somebody run who promises to be really open and tell you everything that they vote for and why they vote for and how they've been maybe solicited to vote other ways or something, like a really open, honest person? Wouldn't that person be really electable to the general public? Like, I promise I will tell you everything I'm going to do and be on your side. Or is that an impossible dream?
Well, I mean, I hope it's not an impossible dream. But I do think when people do decide to run for office, they're very quickly, sort of like the story I mentioned about my friend and his facial hair, they're very quickly swept up into the party dogmatism of and frightened in a lot of ways, basically told, you're not going to win a seat unless you do this. They're encouraged to not take risks. They're encouraged to not speak out or say anything that may be conceived as controversial by any percentage of the population. So that party system, especially those two large, powerful parties, have a way of corralling people into the lane, almost like cattle, and just getting them to say the right things and do the right things, because they're telling them, well, if you do X, Y, and Z, we're sure you'll get elected. Then you can do what you want. But unfortunately, once they get in office, then, you know, the story changes, because it's, well, if you want to get reelected, you have to do this. And that's really why there's not a lot of people getting elected with those types of principles.
Thanks, Laura. Bob in Madison. Hi.
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 In 1984, I was recruited to run for Congress in the western part of the state. I was pretty well respected throughout the congressional district, as I had done quite a bit of work on a number of issues, so I had a public presence and had given quite a number of speeches and done meetings where I'd met with a lot of people, and I felt really good and excited about all of that. And so we formed a committee and got working on it, and first thing we had to decide was is where we were going to get the money, and that started a series of Thursday through Sunday meetings with people who would write $10,000 checks.
Mm-hmm.
And I lasted for 4 weeks doing that. And I couldn't stand it. It was the most awful and humiliating kind of experience that I had. And the most frightening part of it was is that, you know, they were writing the checks, and sometimes I wondered why. And I could have probably have gotten elected. And my wife and I determined that if that happened, it would be the worst thing, because we would start all over again doing nothing but fundraising, that the our idealism was completely torched. So public funding is so critical to candidate recruitment, to freedom, to open elections. If we can't have that, I think we're finished. I mean, it's a singular thing that I think we really have to change, and will change our country.
So, Bob, you felt as though you would be beholden to the people who gave you the large amounts of money, that there's no other way than to feel beholden?
Well, I didn't feel like I was going to be beholden, but they felt that I was going to be beholden.
I see.
So you see, when that first telephone call came and we were having a discussion with a large donor who said, you know, I really would like to have you consider going this way, and you had to say, you know, I really appreciate that, but I just don't think that's the right way. You knew what was going to happen.
Right.
I mean, the next thing was you were going to be told that forget the money on the next election, you're toast.
Right. So you subsequently have not run for anything?
No, I haven't.
Huh.
I haven't. It's I wouldn't get into that. I've worked on behalf of candidates, and I dearly appreciate all of their willingness to jump in and to do the fundraising that's necessary. But it's a terrible it's a terrible kind of situation that you have to put yourself in, as far as the money. I mean, go to a fundraiser where you're, you know, writing out checks to people, and you know, the candidate is there, and you know, all of the thank yous and the whole thing. I mean,
right.
The candidates are thanking the people instead of the people thanking the candidate.
Right. I see your point. Well, it sounds like we lost somebody who may have been a fine public servant, Adam.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's just unfortunate because it happens over and over, and I agree 100% that publicly funded elections is the way that we really need to run things, and that's done in plenty of countries all over the world, but unfortunately, you know, lobbying corporations don't want that because right now they're behind the scenes, you know, controlling so much of everything because they can basically put as much money into any election that they want to. So I agree completely that publicly funded elections are really a big issue that we need to try to work on as well.
Thanks, Bob. Ron in Muscadet. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
I decided around 10 years ago, when I was so frustrated with both of the major political parties, that about the only thing I could do as an independent voter, just one guy, was to start voting for anyone except a Republican or a Democrat, no matter who those parties were running, and to try to let people know that I was doing that. And fortunately, because there is the internet, I'm able to spread that word. I don't expect it to make a difference in my lifetime. I'm in my 60s. But it might happen in my children's lifetime, and it might happen in their children's lifetime when there get to be enough voters who do not vote for Republicans or Democrats, that at least one third party, and maybe a couple third parties, or third and fourth parties, can be viable and can begin to take this two-party system apart. It frustrates me that so many people in this country think that the two-party system is part of our government. It was never meant to be, and Thomas Jefferson warned against it, and George Washington warned against it. It just should never have happened. So that's what I'm doing. I'm voting independent for someone other than a Republican or a Democrat for the sake of the long-term better.
Thanks so much for your call, Ron. Adam.
Yeah, that's so interesting because I do think that voting against candidates is actually one of the most powerful tools we have, and that's what I suggest in the book as far as getting the right state legislators in the House and Senate in your state to try and get this electoral reform passed, is to every time someone's up for election, if they haven't supported or say they're not going to support electoral reform of this manner, vote against them. Get them out, get the next person in. And if that next person serves 2 years and they're not willing to do it, get them out. Vote for the challenger again. I call it the revolving door strategy, because voting for a Republican or Democrat is not working. So voting against whoever is not going for these reforms is probably the best tool that we have. So it's interesting that he said that.
Thank you, Ron. Mike is going to bring up an issue that's an important one we have not yet mentioned. Mike in Appleton, hi.
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 I'll just start off saying that I consider myself an independent, although I will be voting for Bernie Sanders in the primary, in the Democratic primary. The main point I had and the question I have is that in Wisconsin, you know, Wisconsin's been gerrymandered to where federal House of Representatives is the best we can do is a 5-3 Republican to Democratic majority. And so basically we have a majority party, which is, you know, what we've got for at least the next 10 years. So if you narrow this down, I like the view of your host, or of the person that you have on. But in Wisconsin, we haven't even gotten, we're to the point where we have a majority and a minority party. So how do we even get off of that to even begin to get at a, you know, a great idea like your?
Yeah, it's a good question. You mentioned gerrymandering in the book, Adam.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it really is the current gerrymandering problem is a result of what I call, you know, collusion between the Republicans and Democrats. I think I said it's symphonic polarization, meaning that they have agreed with each other, either verbally or nonverbally, okay, look, we're going to allow you to be the other party, and together we'll make sure that we each win, you know, have 50% chance of winning every single election. So that's why gerrymandering is such a big problem, because these two organizations are controlling the entire election process. So if at the state level you could change some of those election laws and you had different candidates who were not Republicans or Democrats, either independents or third or fourth party people, the Republicans and Democrats would not have the power to gerrymander the way that they do now. Right now, they said it's an implied agreement, gentleman's agreement, so to call it, that they're going to agree that the two of them are going to divide the whole country up, basically state by state, so that they can just remain in power and not have anybody challenge.
Thank you, Mike, very much for your important call. Mark in Milwaukee. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just kind of wanted to add a lighthearted element, I guess. This conversation reminds me of the movie Brewster's Millions with Richard Pryor, where he runs for office, and not to get anybody to vote for him, but just to get everybody to vote none of the above, and it kind of made me laugh. And it kind of goes to a quote from Jerry Garcia that I remember, that choosing the lesser of evils is still choosing evil. And I feel that voting is difficult because it seems that our candidates are not the ones that are deciding policy. It's the gross amounts of money, as you say, that are flowing into our political system that is in fact deciding our policies. And you can't vote against the interests of companies like, you know, ExxonMobil and Boeing and you know, media moguls and Wall Street bankers and war profiteers. And I guess I just don't know where we go from here. And until we do change campaign finance, I don't see how we can widen the gap between Republican and Democrat and how we can change where we're at.
Thanks, Mark. Where do we go from here in about 35 seconds, Adam?
Okay.
We're out of time.
I think everybody feels the same about campaign finance reform, and that needs to happen. But unfortunately, that has to happen at the federal level. So if people get their right people in office at their state level, including governors, senators, and state assembly or House of Representatives, then you can get the right people in office at the federal level, and maybe then you'll have a shot at improving these big issues like campaign finance reform. And that's really what it's all about, is the state level moving on to the federal level and making lives better for everybody in the country.
Thank you so much, Adam, for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. The author of Two Tyrants, The Myth of a Two-Party Government and Liberation of the American Voter. Thanks. In case you didn't make it on the air, go to our Facebook page and leave your comments there, because we love to read them. And this show is indicative of the fact that they don't call us the Ideas Network for nothing, huh? A lot of ideas. It was a good hour, good stimulating hour. Thanks to Adam for being with us. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and to KP as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News from National Public Radio is coming up momentarily. Please stay with us for the second hour of the show. Maybe you've joined this craze, and I'm interested particularly in finding some of you who have joined the craze of coloring as an adult. I'm about to join it. I just don't have the proper equipment, but I will do this soon. We'll be speaking with the editor of Outside the Lines, and we'll invite you to join us as well. It's a good way to de-stress. Thanks for listening to this hour.